This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Welcome back to Kelly and Ramya. And as we get closer to your weekend and that gateway to the weekend gets swung wide open, we still got work to do, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome in to join Grant and I, producer Laura Bain. Laura, welcome. It's wonderful to have you working alongside the team for the next while. And we hope that the first, couple of weeks now? We have gone all right. I guess week, right?
Just first week, and it's wonderful to be here, Kelly, and thanks so much. It's awesome to be back in the AMI family for a little bit.
All right. Really wonderful.
Fantastic to have you here, and I'm trying to figure out what the vibe is going to be for this segment. Kelly, you said we still have work to do, so I'm taking off my fun hat and putting on my getting back to the grind here. All right, let's just launch right into it. So I'm kidding. On Monday, orientation and mobility specialist Mark Rankin chatted about which aspects of O&M are changing, but also what's staying the same.
When you think of the core sort of things that we teach, which is the beginning stuff, is especially with someone who's younger, vision loss, you've got to make sure that they're learning their concepts and that they've got they're able to integrate their sensory information. And those two things go hand in hand. And there's not much of a substitute for that. I mean, there's no substitute for firsthand experience of the world, right? If you want to make sense of the world, the best thing to do is to go out and put your hands on it and listen to it. If you do have some vision, to look at it. And that's hasn't changed that much. There's certainly ways in which you can use technology to kind of help develop concepts.
Yeah, I mean, there might be some day when technology, you know, becomes a, you know, more of a miracle and kind of help with everything. But in my experience, you know, being in a community where, to be honest, orientation and mobility skills seem to me like they are often weaker than they should be, it really makes me think that there are often two kinds of mobility training that people receive. One kind is very like situational, practical focus only on the routes that you're covering at that moment, like walk until you reach a set of stairs, climb the stairs, square up here, turn right, you know, whatever it is, get to the curb, whatever. But the really valuable kind is that strategic mobility, telling you how to solve problems, teaching how to figure out the cardinal directions, teaching you just stuff that you might not be able to observe without sight about how the roads are designed, you know, common concepts for how street addresses and blocks are laid out, just all kinds of stuff that I really think is often lacking in education. And I'm not even really sure, although there is probably a standard curriculum, quote unquote, I'm not really sure how standardized the instruction is about when everything needs to be implemented and how it needs to be taught. Laura, I know you've touched on this a little bit in Halifax. I would say certainly looking at my own education in that subject left a lot to be desired. What do you think about orientation mobility, any of the things I've touched on, or just, you know, how it could be improved?
Yeah, Grant, I think you're so right about the need for those global skills. And honestly, I feel so fortunate to have learned O&M kind of in that way here through the School for the Blind. And essentially, you know, I know in the segment it was talking a lot about sort of technology, but just gaining those like quote unquote old school blind skills of learning sort of the layout of the city. You mentioned those cardinal directions. I feel like I was always the only kid my age who knew in terms of north, south, east, and west. But also the ability to go up and talk to strangers. And that was something that my O&M instructor really forced me to do from a young age. And I'm just so grateful because I feel like it served me not just in terms of navigating, but also things like employment and social situations. So I love assistive technology. I use it when I get, you know, disoriented, but I do hope that it's also being taught in terms of those global skills.
Yeah, feel the same way. I love that you mentioned, Laura, the going up and talking to people, because so many kids are raised, don't talk to strangers, don't do this, be very wary of people. And sure, we were taught the same thing, but also to utilize people, to utilize not knowledge of the directions that you mentioned. Because as you say, Laura, I was the only kid that knew, oh, that's out of the north or that, let's go west. What are you talking about? And it really, really did me good later on. It got to the point, though, where I was a bit obsessive about north, south, east, and west. Wherever I was, whether I was in Toronto or somewhere, I had to know, okay, north is over there. And it was almost like I was a bird with that kind of a radar. But I also liked when Mark mentioned how much he learns from the students. I like the fact that he knows his students, that you get to know. I've worked with Mark, and even the first time I worked with him, it was like he knew, because he knew the little things. We can't look at signs and say, oh yeah, there's number 35 over there and be okay. It was finding the landmarks, figuring out your walking, what you tend to do, your tendencies. And if you have someone doing mobility with you that's either grown up teaching you from an early start, or you learn the basic skills at somewhere like a W. Ross or the Halifax School, you really had an opportunity to be able to keep those things in your pocket for down the road for your own travels later. So really wonderful. Enjoyed the segment with Mark really well. Last Thursday, folks, we spoke to Fern Lullum about body image and how we can think differently about the way we look.
Why do we so often have insecurities about the way we look?
I think there are so many factors that go into this, Brock. So there is, you know, we grow up, we have certain experiences maybe when in childhood. So we might have our parents sort of making comments about the way that we look, you know, or we might have a brother or sister that might be, you know, more attractive than us, or at least that's what everyone is telling us. We always compare ourselves to them. We might kind of be bullied at school for the way that we look, and that can, you know, we can carry that with us throughout our lives and always remember those horrible comments that were made. Talking of comparison, we live in a world of comparison. You know, we have social media these days where everyone is looking perfect, or at least so it would seem on the screen. And so we compare ourselves to everyone that we think is just a normal person. You know, like right back in the day, people used to compare themselves to models that they'd see in magazines. And at least you could say, but they're models. But these days, it just looks like everyday people are looking stunning constantly. And how can we compare with that? How can we keep up?
As a blind person, it was something I never cared about, especially wardrobe-wise. I mean, look, I'm a big guy, and as I mentioned during the segment, some of the issues that I've had have been places with trying to find wardrobe and plays. And people don't mean any negative comment, I hope, but to say to me, well, let's see what we can find that'll fit you, you know, and say it in that way, it's like, oh my God, it's got an impossible task ahead of me. It makes you feel like, well, okay. So when I've had the question, how much racism have you encountered as a black person? Not as much as I have as a blind or a heavier person or a bigger person, however way you're comfortable describing that. And I've also learned, well, what makes me feel good that way? And we are so affected by social media, clothes on, what people wear on TV. I remember my favorite characters on TV. Oh, I wanted to wear that kind of jacket that guy wore and stuff like that. We can't afford that. Okay, then something that kind of looks the same, maybe made out of something cheaper. You know, it was what we decided for our own feeling better. And then you start asking yourself, well, why do I care? And some people go that far to not care, to not feel they need to get into it, to not make it a big deal for them. So they're fine with that. And I know a lot of time I waited for Christmas and whatever my family handed me, yay, those are the clothes for the year. And especially before I worked, when I started to work and tried to find what I wanted to wear, had the budget to kind of look for the things I'd like to wear. And one of the greatest compliments that an NBA basketball player gave me on showing up and how I looked went really far with me. Not because it quantified what I was wearing, that I was doing the right thing, good for me. It was because he made me feel that I had that sense and respect for myself and also them. And I needed him to explain to me what he meant. And he kind of meant that there are people that show up here to do these interviews with us wearing a little less than what one would say is respectable, showing up in their track pants and, hey, ready to do my big interview with you. And they just felt sometimes, yeah, I'm sure you're ready. You look the part. And for me, not ever having someone really say that in that capacity It was darn flattering. I will say that for sure. Grant, any experiences you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you bring this up because we just had a big discussion about this with my family yesterday over dinner. It's funny with body image because it's that one thing that is totally subjective. It should not matter at all, but absolutely does, unfortunately, matter in the world. Either if you have low body image, also maybe if you have... you're on the other side where you're getting a lot of compliments and such and such. And then you always have to wonder if your self-worth is, you know, just linked to that positive body image that you've developed. I have to say for myself, one of the most frustrating things also goes back to wardrobe, because I don't particularly care in terms of, you know, I can't look in the mirror or, you know, observe the colors and textures and whatever that I'm wearing, but I would like to be able to control the statement I'm making. And that's really hard for me because, for example, one of the things I get told all the time is I look very conservative, which I'm not at all in terms of my beliefs and my values, a little TMI, but I think I dress very, very conservatively. And I've been struggling a lot with, like, how can I kind of change my style without being too outrageous, but to look a little bit more sort of fun and, you know, upbeat, whatever. And it's really, really tough because all we have to go on is the people in our lives who are telling us and giving us advice. But I feel like for me, I don't have as much control as I would like to have. Over my image and controlling that style and the statement that I absolutely am making visually. Laura, any thoughts?
Yeah, and I just really appreciate the perspective that you both are bringing in terms of kind of body image and having like low to no vision. And I feel that's something that I'm sort of encountering more as I get older and my vision deteriorates, is that I sort of have less of a sense of what's typical in terms of like, what kind of pants do people wear? Like, what's appropriate in this situation? I have no idea. Like, yeah. People might tell me, you know, my partner says, oh, like lots of people wear sweatpants out to, you know, brunch or whatever. Okay, well, you know, it's just hard when you can't kind of observe for yourself what is like the norm, or maybe as Grant says, like expressing a particular style. But just kind of going back to that conversation you had with Fern, I feel like it's become so pervasive and like normalized, even expected for us to criticize ourselves in terms of how we look and our bodies, and like even, you know, talking about dieting after the holidays and things like that. And I struggle with it a bit because I'm definitely interested in health and wellness and nutrition and all of that. But these social standards that have absolutely nothing to do with health, and quite frankly, like often have to do with things like racism or patriarchy, kind of get tangled up in conversations about health. So I feel like we need to make that, we need to make that more conscious and not kind of have this rhetoric of health when it's really nothing to do with health.
Hear, hear.
Monday's show on Know Your Rights, Daniel McLaughlin and Senator Kim Pate reflected on the recent details announced about the Canada Disability Benefit.
People with disabilities aren't a big voting block, apparently. And so the fact that the money hasn't been allocated in the way that it was promised is disgraceful. And but it seems to be only political. And even the delay in getting it was political. And, you know, there's something in the bill, but it's almost, you know, I can't think of a better way of framing it than a slap in the face. That's exactly, I mean, it's worse than that. It's keeping people in incredibly dire straits at the same time as, you know, everybody's struggling, yes, but there are some people struggling far more.
You know, what I so appreciated about this conversation was how Danielle and Senator Pate didn't tiptoe around sort of that disconnect between what the government talked about and what has been announced. They really didn't mince their words there. I've been following the disability benefit pretty closely, and I have to say, personally, like, I've never felt so betrayed by the government. I don't want to be too negative, but this has really impacted me the last week and a half or so, because I honestly believed that this benefit was going to make a difference in the lives of people with disabilities and be something along the lines of a guaranteed basic income, which is what was being talked about, and like lift folks up to, or ideally above, the poverty line. But one aspect that's not getting, you know, quite as much attention, it was touched on during this segment, as the dollar amount, is the fact that it's going to be tied to household rather than individual income. And this is despite, you know, advice from organizations such as the Disabled Women's Network of Canada, who spoke to the government about the issue, like the issue of intimate partner violence, which is disproportionately high amongst people with disabilities, and how that's often tied to people having economic dependence on an abusive partner. And also, you know, there was, I know, testimony from people who spoke about being a couple in a, like a couple where both people have disabilities and having to pretend to be roommates and not being able to get married if you want to, or even having to live in separate dwellings because you don't want to have your benefits clawed back. So for me, it's just really disappointing that the government has seemingly pretty much ignored everything that they've been told from the community and from experts. Grant, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Laura, you said it so well, and it's just a couple of things really going on here with the benefits for people who are unemployed or underemployed, and also just the structural challenges in this country with getting a job for people who are very able and want to work, and keeping you tied to just horrible, undignified or abusive situations that are hard to escape from. Yeah, I just don't know. I love my country, but we have a lot of work to do in terms of valuing people who have intrinsic self-worth but are not very valued in our society. I wish I could end on a better note. Kelly?
Guys, you said so much there, and I go back to the fact that, like you mentioned, they've ignored everything that was said, the things that would make different, and those concerns. Hey, I shouldn't have to hold off on getting married. I shouldn't have to lie about this person being, I shouldn't have to be dependent on someone else. We shouldn't have to live in a country where we allow landlords just to keep raising rent higher and higher, and then talking about, oh, gee, a lot of people living on the street. Ooh, the number's getting bigger. We shouldn't here have to do that any more than we should have to think about how come people are starving. Laura, thank you very much for participating in your first Cut for Time with us. Next week, we have you back for The Buzz.
Happy to be around.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks.
Producer Laura Bain joining Grant and I on the Cut for Time. And as mentioned, she'll be back next week as we do The Buzz Wednesday through Friday. After the break, we'll tell you what's coming up on AMI TV, AMI Audio, a couple of highlights for you for the weekend. And look up, look way up, there's a giraffe. Yeah, he's got a couple of neck and back problems that we'll hear about. Yeah, it just needs a slight adjustment. We'll talk about it after this.
We'll be back with more of Kelly and Ramya after this short break.
Join me every couple weeks for the Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther podcast, where we learn about outdoor tech and tips. Plus, we look at news affecting the environment. AMI's Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther is available from your favorite podcast provider.